shed a brain in 2012. For everybody had a hot take from hell. You changed it all and then burned.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday. It is the 22nd of May, and we couldn't be more delighted to have you with us this morning as we really focus on our lockbox, focus on making money for this radio station, focus on the importance of supporting WAMC and what we do, and have a panel as well and talk about what's happening in the world. And if that doesn't entice you to help out, I don't know what will. Welcome to the program. We were just hearing the music of the Bleachers, which is one of my favorites. They got a new album out today. It's called Dirty Hits, and it's fascinating. And so we look forward to hearing their music throughout our time together this morning. I'll introduce our panel to you, and we'll get started here. Public policy and communications expert Teresa Bourgeois is with us. Good morning, Teresa. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm doing well on this beautiful day. Glad the heat's down and the sun's out. Memorial Day weekend, just want to remind everyone, think about it's honoring those who died while serving our country in the armed forces. So it's not just the, you know, beginning of summer. But it was interesting. I was looking it up. It started in 1868, where people were laying flowers on graves. It was called Decoration Day.
Right.
And it's attributed to be started in Waterloo, New York.
Yes.
Although there's a little controversy about that. There's a museum there, though. And birthplace of the observance in 1866, I think, according to Encyclopedia Britannica. But it's been a holiday since 1971, so to all those who, it's a time to honor those who died in service and to remember the Gold Star families.
Where Judy Patrick and I live in Greenwich, New York, the annual Memorial Day parade is tonight at 6 p.m. There is no parade I love more than this Memorial Day parade. It is the greatest parade. You get the fire trucks, you get the kids, you get the veterans, you get
Americana.
It is Americana. It is simply, you got to plan for it because it's like 7 minutes long.
Oh.
But it's great. It's just fantastic.
I used to ride my bike in that parade every year, and what you would do with your bicycle is you would get streamers and you would weave them in and out of the spokes of your bicycle.
Go.
And sometimes you would put the baseball cards on there too,
yeah.
So
make
you
the
would
noise.
Blanket, yeah.
Get the noise. But we always decorated our bikes, and there were probably 20, 30, 40 kids at the end of the parade, right behind the horses.
You know, they put up all of the veterans banners in the town. And they have a lot of towns do that.
Yes.
They put up the banners honoring the veterans. And I'm especially happy. My dad's been up there for quite a while. But but they move them. They take them down and then they move them around. But now, Dad, if you're coming in from Cambridge, it says, "Welcome to Greenwich," and Dad is right overhead. And I just love it. It's just so cool. Very welcoming moment. But
That's spectacular.
Very, very, very cool. And I can't wait to go to the parade tonight.
Just want to remember the purpose of the
absolutely.
Of the moment.
And there's no better way of doing it. And then going to one of these parades, and then as you follow it up to the cemetery and
put the flags.
Yes, it's very, very cool. Judy Patrick, as I mentioned, is here, former vice president for editorial development at the New York Press Association, longtime editor of the Daily Gazette. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning. And we used to run a story every year trying to explain the difference to our readers between Memorial Day and Veterans Day, because people get those so confused. Veterans Day honors all veterans. Memorial Day is specifically for
the war dead. Yeah.
Right.
But it is a very, I think, poignant and important part of any town's history to sort of look in and see the people who served. Bob, you know this better than anybody.
And Cambridge has its own parade, which
yes.
is quite spectacular as well. And I remember as a kid growing up. Yes, so pleasant Memorial Day, and thanks to all the veterans and their families. who sacrificed. I would also like to say to my friends from the lower Hudson Valley to the upper reaches of Washington County, if you're listening this morning, please support this radio station. This is Democracy in Action.
Thank you very much. Well, Trump will be in town today, so that should help.
Mm.
Yeah.
I want to echo that too. sorry, not about Trump, I do want to echo that.
No, you can echo that too.
Yeah, you know, this is why? Okay.
But you think he'll tune in and become a member?
Yeah. What do you think? Oh, that'd be great.
Didn't I defund them?
Through his charity. That's gone now, right?
I don't know. I can't keep track of this stuff. That's why I have you. Bob Brigham is a professor of history and international relations at Vassar College, and it's always a delight to have you on the program. Thank you very
always
much
good to
for,
be here.
For being here. Okay, let's go and go to what is happening in the world at large, and a lot of things swirling here. I'll be honest with you. I was at an event last night at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center. There was a culinary arts event that we had for this new cookbook for the Aragosta restaurant in Maine, and Goose Cove. And it was a really fun event. We had a great time, but I got home late. So I started thinking, oh, I have to work on the stories. And then when I got back to my desk, I got an email from Teresa, and I realized that she pretty much had done my work for me. So I was like, all right, God love you, Teresa. But rightfully, talking about the backlash to Trump's $1.8 billion settlement, 1776, which I have trouble saying, so I'll just say $1.8 million. And funding delays, the GOP immigration bill. So here's in a nutshell what happened yesterday. We've been talking about this story all week, rightfully so, I believe. But Senate Republicans abruptly left Washington on Thursday without voting on a roughly $70 billion bill to fund immigration enforcement agencies, frustrated with the White House and at an impasse over whether to try to block a new $1,776,000,000 settlement fund to compensate Trump's allies who believe that they have been politically prosecuted. Republicans have already abandoned part of the bill that provided $1 billion in security money for the White House complex, the Ballroom Project, and President Donald Trump's ballroom specifically, as well as just overall security, which is interesting. Amid backlash from members of their own party, this went on. But the settlement announced by the Justice Department this week prompted even more questions, spurring a push to limit the taxpayer dollars that some feared could go to Trump supporters who harmed law enforcement officers in the January 6th, 2021 attack on the Capitol. A tense meeting with Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche on Thursday morning to discuss the settlement only heightened the frustration among senators. Soon after it ended, Republican leaders announced they would not vote on the immigration enforcement measure until they returned from a Memorial Day recess the week of June 1st, which was Trump's self-imposed deadline for them to pass it. Blanche, quote, had an appreciation for the depth of feeling, end quote, whatever that means, among GOP senators, Senate Majority Leader John Thune said afterward, as a growing number of them spoke out against the idea. Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell, the former GOP leader, called the settlement utterly stupid and morally wrong. The nation's top law enforcement official is asking for a slush fund to pay people who assault cops, McConnell said in a statement afterward. The last-minute scramble on the bill came as Democrats have criticized Republicans for trying to fund Trump's ballroom when voters are concerned about affordability issues, and as some GOP lawmakers have grown increasingly frustrated with Donald Trump. Several GOP senators have spoken out against the Justice Department settlement announced this week, and many were upset by the president's endorsement on Tuesday of Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton in next week's primary runoff against Senator John Cornyn. There is a lot going on, Judy.
So there's no accountability, there's no transparency, there's no justification for how this money will be doled out of the slush fund. You look at it and you think, oh, the scales have fallen from their eyes and they've seen the light and they realize this is corruption at its peak form. No, I don't think so. I think that they can read the room. But they're going to tweak this bill to put a couple of little pieces of transparency and accountability in it. But maybe after the election, this thing's going to go forward, as well as the ballroom, I think. You would hope, and I think people, I think it's naive to think that the Republicans are finally getting a spine and saying this seems corrupt. I think it's just a matter of political will. And can I also say that every time I come on the roundtable, it seems like Congress has taken another vacation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. My surprise to that was that I thought it was just they were just going away. Like they left yesterday. They'd be back on Tuesday after the federal holiday, but not until June 1st. They're waiting till our fund drive. But you're right.
Yeah. It's like do the job.
We should start keeping track.
Yeah, their calendar is online. You can see it, but they have a lot of built-in vacation there. They will say they're going home to do constituent services. Let's hope they're going home and getting some feedback from people paying $5 a gallon for gasoline and $6 for a box of cereal.
Bob,
I think that's why this was dead in the water, because they were all going home and no one wants to go home. This is one of the most important political weekends of the entire calendar. And to go home and try to face your constituents, having voted positively for a fund that is going to reimburse for loss and damages people who participated in the January 6th riots, that's not going to fly in any district. And I think even the Trump ballroom stuff, this is the most thinly veiled cover. Started at $200 million, now it's up to $400 million. And the language in this bill was $1 billion for Secret Service, but you know that there's no specifics in that at all. And that some of that, even though Trump said the ballroom was going to be completely paid for by private donations, it's clear that out of that $1 billion earmarked here, that $400 million of it was going to go for the construction of the ballroom. So I'm not surprised it got slammed. I am surprised that Trump thought by sending his acting attorney general that he'd have some traction. And this is just, that wasn't a good political move from somebody who usually is better at the optics of politics.
Well, and not the least of which is it's his own personal lawyer who is now the acting attorney general who is
colluded.
Doing the bidding. Right.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to contain myself.
I understand, Teresa.
Like a cork about ready to go off.
Do you knowing that the cork is about to propel itself out of the bottle, do you mind if I take a quick break and come back and I'll let you pop the cork and we'll
as long
we'll
as people donate while we're gone.
There you go. 1-800-323-9262. WAMC.org. We'll continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, talking about the GOP rift over Donald Trump's $1.8 million settlement, although there is some question as to that word settlement.
Billion, not a settlement.
An agreement, not a settlement, an agreement.
Right.
So that's my bad eyesight, because I looked at that on my screen and I saw 1.88 and I said, that's not right. And no, that's not an 8, it's a B. clean the glasses. Okay.
1.8 million was a starting point of
billion.
No, 1.8 oh. million was a starting point of destroying the reflecting pool, which is now up to 20 million to destroy the reflecting pool. That's a whole other thing. It's 1.776 billion.
Okay. Your thoughts on what's happening here, Teresa?
Well, I think it's important to think about the entire bill because this is a quote-unquote reconciliation bill, and it's a way that they are trying to fund the Trump-Vance ICE detention program, not for 1 year, but for 3 years. And remember, that's the origin of this. And then they tucked into that the $1 billion for the ballroom, which the Trump had said that over and over again that he had donations to pay for it. Oddly, yesterday at a press availability, he said that he was going to make donations to pay for the ballroom. But then they added in this bridge too far, $1.776 billion fund. And it was interesting. The day after they announced it, there was a congressional hearing, a Senate hearing, where the Senate Democrats, I thought, were extremely powerful in their pushback about what this settlement meant and what does it mean. And they kept trying to get the president's lawyer, who is now acting attorney general or acting as attorney general, I'm not sure which one, but still acting as his lawyer, trying to get him to just say that none of this money would go to people who violently beat up police officers and then were tried by a jury of their peers and found and convicted for doing so and incarcerated for doing so and then pardoned for doing so. And Blanche, he could not even say that. He refused to. He talked all the way around it. And so I think this finally is a bridge too far for Senate Republicans. I think, you know, where is the outrage? I've said it over and over again, but if people can't be outraged about this, I think, you know, we have a real problem in our country. But think about this in the context of the $10 billion in your tax money for the so-called Trump Board of Peace, which again moves $10 billion out of the U.S. Treasury into a fund that will be controlled by Donald Trump, supposedly to be used for restoration in Gaza. But how's that going so far? And remember, the first $1.25 billion of that has been moved out of a fund for international disaster relief, for peacekeeping operations, and other foreign aid programs. Those are your tax dollars that are now moving out of the government hands and into a fund that's totally controlled by Donald Trump, and it will be going forward. And think about the $1 billion plus that has been moved out of the U.S. Treasury, that's actually still in the U.S. Treasury, but is being used to refurbish an airplane that will go to Donald Trump and his library for his use after he's no longer president. I mean, I just think that this all adds up to a real serious, you know, whole series of problems that we have, that the House and Senate Republicans need to be held accountable for. And I also think we can't forget that there's $70 billion in this for the Trump-Vance ICE detention campaign. And as we hear story after story after story of the reality of the 78,000 people who are currently being held in detention around this country without any due process, some of them are Americans, many of them are people who were following a lawful process to become American citizens. Only a very small percentage, less than 5%, have committed violent crimes, yet they're being held in detention against their will. Too many of them are children. The stories over and over and over are about horrific conditions. And so I think we need some outrage about that portion of the bill, too. And these folks are all going home, and they need to hear from people who are concerned about this.
When you look at all good points, but just at the slush fund itself, of the idea that you are putting cash on the table for people to do your bidding, to basically say, you can go out and do whatever you want in my name, and I got your back. Well, the American people and the money that they have put in have your back.
Is that not prepaying a militia?
Well, that's exactly the question I was going to ask. Well, yours is certainly more eloquent than mine was going to be. But, yes. I mean, to me, it is setting up the lattice work. It is setting up the infrastructure for there to be an unruly mob that is going to be paid and is going to be helped along every step of the way, because there's absolutely nobody overlooking it right now. Hopefully that'll change, but I have to agree with Judy. I think the changes are going to be minor and largely insignificant.
How can this go through? I mean, how can it go through? The only way to stop, one of the ways it will stop it is if those who know tax policy say, because it's not a settlement, it is an agreement, Trump could potentially owe taxes on that money. But of course, who's going to make him collect taxes under this current IRS? But seriously, I mean, how do you justify that? I've said this before, and I think former Mayor Sheen mentioned it yesterday. Where are the police unions in this country? They have Trump's ear. Every police union in this country should be backing the Metropolitan Police and the Capitol Police and all those police officers, those 140 police officers who were brutally beaten and injured by this mob of insurrectionists. Where are they? They should be speaking out and saying, not in our name, not use of our tax dollars. And everyone says, well, he backs the police. I mean, this is if you're listening to the hearing the other day, this when the Democrats quizzing him, not the acting attorney general, not just on this, but on the cuts to the cops programs, on the cuts to the violence against women program, on the cuts to the community violence programs, on the cuts to DEA. I mean, they are proposing deep cuts in law enforcement funding at the community level all across the country. At the same time, they're shifting this funding.
Yeah, the overnight polling on this suggests that this is going to have a tougher go of it in the Senate. That the senators overwhelmingly are looking at polls that say in their home states that this has no traction at all. This is one of those few issues that doesn't hit that 30% that's always going to vote with the president no matter what. The polling on this has been down to about single digits in support of this. So I think it's going to be a harder fight than this. Isn't going to be one of the think that Trump just steamrolls through. This is going to be hard. And attaching it to this specific bill was, I think, politically stupid. There's enough controversy here with the ballroom, but to link them both in this reconciliation bill, it just brings it to tension more. Maybe that's the plan, is to, if you're looking at this shiny thing over here, which is so outrageous, you'll forget this other outrageous thing. I mean,
the $70 billion.
Yeah, that would make more political sense to me than trying to get these two controversial, extremely controversial measures on a reconciliation bill that already was going to have a tough go.
We have to take a break. We'll pause for a moment. We'll be back and continue the conversation. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org.
The mirror will play on me.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion with Teresa Bourgeois, Robert Brigham, and Judy Patrick. We'll continue the conversation. We're going to go for about 15 minutes, and then we're going to take a little break for some fundraising action in Lockbox Central, and then we'll be back to wrap up the program. We welcome you to help out in any way you can right now. WAMC.org, WAMC.org, or we have volunteers standing by at 1-800-323-9262. So letters that we have from listeners who say there's not a single ounce of objectivity in Trump's version of weaponization. J6 rioters get a pardon and a big payoff, while James Comey gets indicted for sharing a picture of seashells by the seashore. Republicans will be paying a big price for enabling all of this in the fall. Even they can see it coming now.
Can I thank that writer for reminding us? I think that the one thing that one of the things that the Trump and his folks have been very good at is this disinformation campaign, labeling the things that they've done that are illegal as weaponization. You know, just turning it around and mislabeling it their actions. These people were convicted because they did things that were illegal. Trump was prosecuted because he did things, you know, these actions filed against him is because he and his ilk did things that were illegal. If they didn't do things that were illegal, like the way they ran their charity or like the way they ran their business, then they wouldn't be prosecuted for it. So I think that I appreciate the highlighting that this really is part of a disinformation campaign.
But I also think people have a very short memory. And Republicans may be calculating that by November, this will all be in the distant, you know, and it will be forgotten or at least not be top of mind. I mean, can you imagine what's going to happen to all of us between now and November? Tons of stuff. And this ballroom, this slush fund might get pushed down. We have forgotten 90% of the outrageous stuff Trump has already done.
But it's not going to get, like, sane.
No.
I mean,
it'll
just be something else.
Do you think maybe he'll quiet down when he knows the election's coming? Probably not.
Probably not, no.
But people are always saying, well, what can we do? And I think right now, if you are concerned about this fund, or if you're concerned about the ballroom or the arch, or if you're concerned about 78,000 people being in detention with no due process, in some cases children, and many cases people following the law, this is where you call your member of Congress. Even if you think he or she already supports this, it's important for them to have it on record. Call your senator and then register people to vote.
We go to this letter from Russ. Senator Tillis called the slush fund, quote, stupid on stilts, meaning that the fund was politically stupid. This is because Republican senators lack the nomenclature to call out corruption. They just don't see it.
By all reports, they have the closed door meeting was a rather raucous caucus, where the I used to be in those meetings and apparently it was
at the Dr. Seuss room
raucous caucus, but they were you know, they were saying that many of them spoke up and made it clear. I mean, it's as if the acting attorney general wasn't clear from the Senate Democrat saying in a public hearing. And if you haven't listened to that public hearing, you might want to listen to it. It was earlier this week, make it clear how inappropriate this fund was. Apparently, he couldn't answer basic questions about it. It's interesting if this will doom his nomination. I mean, can he possibly be sworn in as Attorney General now in the Senate given this proposal, which he was probably doing it to get the gig full time, and it may have doomed his ability to get the gig.
Vesta writes to us and says, everyone is focused on the cost of this Marie Antoinette ballroom. I don't hear much about how it'll screw the taxpayers for years to come. Trump, if he doesn't leave, Don Jr. and other grifters will be entertaining lobbyists, billionaires, campaign donors, etc. in this gilded boondoggle. These elaborate dinners will be funded by we the people while these corrupt politicians line their pockets. I understand the letter about saying that we're focusing on the cost. I mean, I think the reason that why we're focused on the cost is because, indeed, it screws the taxpayers.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's where it comes from.
And it's not just...
Because it's not private funds. I kept on saying it's private,
private funds,
but it's not private funds.
Yeah, and I do think it's a little bit of a shell game here, too, by the Trump administration. This is what they like to do. But, I mean, this $1 billion in this reconciliation bill that will probably end up, if it passes, would end up at the ballroom, and this is what he's spending about this per week in Iran, and knock-on effects. But we're not talking about Iran this morning. So I think that that's part of the plan here, is to throw enough crazy at the wall that we start picking which one we're going to talk about and prioritize.
Yeah, and I think it's fairly...
We have it on our list.
Yes, I know we do.
It's fairly easy for Republicans to say, well, I'm not in favor of giving money to people who beat up police officers. But let's also talk about those other cases, those other people that are going to step forward, like Mike Lindell, or, you know, there are
Giuliani.
Giuliani, yeah. The people who trashed Nancy Pelosi's office, who, you know, took a dump in the hall, in the middle of the Capitol. There are a lot of people that do not deserve being paid for their crimes, and that's what's happening.
And remember that there are police officers who have not gotten any compensation for what happened to them, which I still find astounding, absolutely astounding. And again, we also are not talking about how this money to ICE would be used for millions of dollars being overspent in dubious deals of buying property from people who, what are the connections there, to build detention centers. It'll be run in some cases by GEO, in some cases by, what's the other one, CoreCivic, who are private prison folks who have given enormous amounts of money to the Republicans, and who are, you know, there's a lots of concerns even before the ICE detention centers about how they ran these private prisons. And even if some of the ballroom was being paid by private money, there should be transparency because is it pay to play and what are they getting for it? I mean, this is not how you're supposed to run the government, folks. And is this really where you want your tax dollars to go? And Robert, the other thing besides the war, we're not talking about all these budget bills are moving through with deep cuts in housing programs, deep cuts in healthcare, decimating the Centers for Disease Control. Or, you know, talking earlier, there's all this news about really bad weather coming this way because of unusually strong El Nino. At the same time, there are more cuts in the NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that does weather detection, and the FEMA budgets that are going to be needed. In fact, if we have these extreme weather cases and storms over the next year that are now being predicted. And so none of that stuff is getting airing because we're talking about the ballroom.
We're going to go over to Lockbox Central in just about 5 minutes, so I want to maybe get another topic in here, and we will go on the Iran war vote, because the GOP pulled the measure to end the Iran war, lacking the votes to defeat it. House Republican leaders abruptly scrapped a planned vote on a measure to direct President Trump to end the conflict or win authorization for it amid party defections and absences. The retreat was a striking setback that exposed fractures within the GOP over the conflict at a moment when the party has begun pushing back forcefully on Mr. Trump and his agenda. So I would like to kind of put those, I mean, we obviously discussed the first story, but one is impacting the other.
Yeah, they are. And I think the top story here is just how ineffective Mike Johnson is as Speaker of the House. You can't count your votes before you bring something to the floor is really the first requirement of a speaker.
May I just read the line from the New York Times? It marked the latest embarrassing blow to Speaker Mike Johnson, who has toiled to defeat efforts to challenge or limit the war in line with the president's wishes, but is contending with growing wariness within his party as the midterm elections approach.
Absolutely. I mean, these elections are right around the corner, and everyone in office has their eye on it. So that's why they didn't pass this reconciliation bill, and that's why they didn't go forward with this vote. This vote was the House; it was going to lose, and so Johnson should have known that. He should have never brought it up for debate. Majority of the Senate voted to open debate on the Iran War Powers Act, but when you pull a measure like this at the 12th hour, it really shows a lack of leadership and a lack of control of your membership. And it's just not good news for Johnson. I doubt that they will bring it back up when they come back from recess.
So then the war just continues.
The war continues. This is just, I mean, and we've got to be clear here. This is just to discuss the viability of instituting a war powers resolution, because the Trump administration is arguing that since the ceasefire, they should get a new 60 days. The War Powers Act says that a president can take the nation's armed forces into harm's way for national security interest as long as they alert the appropriate committees, and then they have 60 days to bring a war resolution. And in fact, the Congress can actually put that down to 30 days if they want. Well, it's still debatable whether Trump ever did consult the appropriate committees, Senate Foreign Relations, Senate Arms, and the House counterparts. But even if he didn't, that 60 days is over. And this is another way that the Trump administration is just not conducting foreign policy at a professional level.
Can I add to there's a little side story I saw last night, not a side story, but it's a related story that the U.S. has decided to delay its approved arms, the congressionally approved arms sales to Taiwan, ostensibly saying that they have to restock their weapon systems. But they said, on the other hand, that they don't, you know, that's not a problem. The Hegseth keeps saying it's not a problem. But here is a case where, you know, Trump goes to China. You know, our major, we should be concerned and focused on China. He goes to China and comes back, and then a few days later, they're delaying the arms. Say, you know what?
Yeah,
you're the military guy.
This is right out of Trump's playbook. And if you listen to Trump on that issue, he went to China thinking that he was going to be able to do what Nixon thought he could do with China, and it never works, which is to have China put pressure on Iran. China's not going to put pressure on Iran. Pakistan's in the region, and Pakistan's getting elevated from this. This is much more sophisticated than the Trump administration can handle. The 200 planes from Boeing that China is supposed to purchase that Trump said was the biggest deal ever. It's not even in the top five deals of all time. So he got very little in exchange for throwing Taiwan under the bus, at least currently. They may change that down the road. But if I was Taiwan, I wouldn't be very happy with this visit either. But it ties back to this inability of the administration to come forward with a coherent foreign policy. And
right.
I think this is what the Senate and the House are trying to respond to right now.
And it's showing the lack of expertise in the State Department and in coordination with the Defense Department, right?
State Department is completely
hollowed out. Yeah.
All right, we're going to go over to Lockbox Central and hear from Sarah and Ray and do the work that we need to do to put funds in the coffers to limit the fund drive as much as possible. It officially begins on June 1st. We'll be back in just about 15 minutes to wrap up the show and talk about some more. We'll have a lightning round when we come back with our wonderful panel, and we do that after this. Welcome back to a Lockbox edition of the Roundtable and the Roundtable panel on this Friday, the 22nd of May, 31 minutes past 10 o'clock. So we have a lot to, we have two stories and we have 20 minutes. I think we can do it. So let us begin. We welcome your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. In a story I have called Lower Prices Through Refrigeration, we learn that the Trump administration and the EPA are rolling back refrigerants, a refrigerant rule for grocery stores. Why? Well, this is the key to lower prices at the grocery stores. You see, if you, like many, many Americans, if you are going into your local grocery store and you've noticed that the one bag of groceries that used to cost you, say, $45, now costs you $75. And you think to yourself, well, what can I do about that? It is all in the refrigeration. That's the problem. Okay, so here we go. As as Teresa hits her forehead. The Trump administration is set to loosen a federal rule that requires grocery stores and air conditioning companies to reduce greenhouse gases used in cooling equipment in what officials say is a push to lower grocery costs. The head of the EPA, Lee Zeldin, said the that's Environmental Protection Agency. I get in trouble when I use letters. Said the Biden-era rule imposes costly restrictions that limit the type of refrigerants U.S. businesses and families can use. The new rule will allow businesses to choose the refrigeration systems that best work for them, saving them billions of dollars. This will be felt directly by American families in lower grocery prices. Now, I don't know much about refrigeration. I'll be honest with you. I do not know much about refrigeration.
But you like a cold drink.
I am fine with a good, hearty, chilled beverage. Yes. So what I don't understand is that if you are giving grocery stores an option to get another system, well, they're not going to get another system until their other system goes, right? They're not going to replace it. And if they, and then even if they do, what guarantee is there that that's ever going to be passed on to the consumer? And most importantly, in my questioning of our brilliant panel, who thinks that up as an idea to solve an affordability crisis?
I think there's like nine things going on here, Joe. First, it was Trump himself who signed a 2020 bill that said you had to stop emitting HFCs, hydrofluorocarbons, and that refrigeration systems and air conditioning systems were one of the major contributors to rising hydrofluorocarbons in the atmosphere, which we know now, of course, cause climate change. To link that with the cost and not to mention what really is leading to the increased cost in groceries, supply chain problems, the war in Iran, the lack of efficient energy is, I think, just an example of how much disdain and contempt the Trump administration really has for the American people. That they think the American people would be dumb enough to watch the performative aspect of this. You sit in the Oval Office, the president at the desk, with leaders of these grocery store chains that, you know, Kroger was there. They made $2 billion last year in operating profit. And Piggly Wiggly was there, $750 million worth of operating profit. And when you do through what they call the FIFO score in economics, that increases the projections. You know, Kroger's at $5 billion. So these are not poor companies. They should be investing in their infrastructure all the time. Trump can pass whatever legislation he wants to push a non-EV, a non-electric vehicle and wind power agenda. But the rest of the world is marching in that direction because it's more efficient. It's more cost effective. So this, to me, is a nothing trying to mask Trump's failures to handle basic economics in this country.
Now, here's how basic my economic knowledge is. But when a couple of years ago, when they came up with these coolers and refrigeration units in grocery stores that were dark with the lights, and then as you walked by them, the lights would go on all of a mm-hmm. sudden. I did not notice the price of Klondike bars going down.
No, that's not the way that works. and again, to think that these corporate entities are going to pass on that savings to the consumers, and that overnight milk is going to drop by 30 cents a gallon. It's just so ridiculous, but it goes in keeping with how little this administration really does care for people who are out there seriously hurting from trying to pay for increased items just to survive. It's, to me, it's cynical.
Turi, okay.
Somebody out there is going to believe it, though. I mean, there are a few people going to buy it. I too, Joe, I love walking down the refrigerator aisle. I feel like I'm walking down a runway or something.
It's no, like, and all the lights are coming down. Finding my spotlight, yes.
Yeah, so, but the The Guardian had a story today as well that 2 days ago, Kroger reached a settlement with the Department of Justice where they were going to pay a $2.5 million civil penalty and agree to spend $100 million on new refrigeration units because they're, after many years they had been investigated, all their refrigeration units were leaking coolant. I have to believe that 2 days later they're in Donald Trump's office. And they're going to get relieved of this agreement they reached with the Department of Justice. Is that it's more than a coincidence that they're going to be able to buy whatever they want, or maybe they don't even need to buy new refrigeration units. Yeah, the price of my drumsticks, which are ice cream things that you have, that's like $8 a box. It's like an expensive.
No, they are.
I mean, it's a luxury that and not needed at my house. But the price of groceries, this was just he's trying to put lipstick on a pig, and it just can't be done effectively.
It is. This came to my attention through Teresa, and you seemed upset.
hard to imagine that I could listen and something would upset me. I found it interesting, and I love that data point about Kroger. So Judy had mentioned that to me earlier, which I wasn't aware about. But I think it's important to remember that these refrigerants have been labeled super polluters, and they do tremendous damage. I'm not a scientist. I don't pretend to be one. I just know what I read, and I've checked in a couple of different places on this, and it emphasizes how leaking refrigerants and using older model refrigerants have a tremendous negative impact on environmental pollution and on accelerating climate change, and that comes at a very high cost to consumers.
Well, that's the other thing I don't understand, Teresa, is that, you know, if you're talking about grocery costs, as the administration was here, how much more are things going to cost when climate change continues and we continue to have droughts and major weather events that destroy the crops?
Right.
It's going to make the prices go up.
This was performative, and it was so cynical and performative. And the other thing is, even if you listen to the media availability, President Trump was talking as if he was totally eliminating all of these regulations. But if you look what the EPA said they were actually doing is they were delaying implementation for over a longer period of time. And they have a problem around the food crisis because for a whole host of reasons. His tariffs, President Trump's tariffs, have caused a problem with the cost of food. And the war in Iran is going to the straits, shutting the Straits of Hormuz is creating a serious long-term food shortage catastrophe. It is a slow rolling catastrophe, which will drive food prices up. There's a whole host of things. I think the most immediate and impactful are the tariffs. So it was interesting at this press conference. First of all, he misstated what the change was, blamed it all on President Biden, and then talked about how terrible it was he wasn't allowed to keep his tariffs, as if some outsiders, not the American public, are paying for the tariffs. But, you know, there's a tariff tax on your food. On much of your food right now. And so this was theater. This was cynical theater. And what's happening at the EPA, and Lee Zeldin was in lockstep with this, but what's happening at the EPA is going to impact us for generations, the dismantling of basic regulations. And here's a program. We're switching out refrigerants. Now, maybe it's possible if for some smaller grocers, they did have some smaller grocers there from smaller local grocers who maybe they needed more time to handle the cost of these changing out these machines.
My understanding was that many small groceries were exempt from this quicker timeline.
See, that's what I thought too, but he had two different local grocers talking about how as independents it's difficult for them, but I thought that there were exemptions for the small grocers. Mm. But that's why I was so interested in the Kroger settlement, because obviously a big problem is not just the old ones, but it's the leaking ones. And so, I mean, I think they were talking as if all regulations were bad. He talked about how, you know, for every new regulation, I'm going to end two. And then he said, and I said it was going to be two, but now it's going to be 36. That seemed a little random and probably not true. But I was also discouraged as a media point in the headlines because it says rolling back these will address, you know, will help food prices. And I just, there's the facts don't back that up. So, again, I think this is dangerous, concerning, and it's not going to lower your bill at the grocery store.
All right, we have a few minutes. I want to get to our final topic for this Friday before we go back to Lockbox Central. And I want to talk about the fate of the Smithsonian Women's History Museum. And, oh boy.
God.
Yeah. What started as a widely backed proposal to locate a new Smithsonian American Women's History Museum on the National Mall, which I have to say there was just a split second in my brain that said, seriously, we don't have one of those? Like, that just floored me.
It's been discussed for
a very long time.
This has been worked on for a very long time.
And I know things take a long time, but here we go. So the Smithsonian
American... the 19th Amendment.
Smithsonian American Women's History Museum on the National Mall devolved into a partisan fight Thursday after Republicans revised the legislation to ensure that no transgender people are included in the exhibits. The House rejected the bill 204 to 216, an outcome that leaves the next steps uncertain. The refused bill also would ban a diversity of views, quote unquote, diversity of views, and give President Donald Trump the final say on where the museum would be located. It was a simple bill. You kind of ruined it with your trans obsession and your culture wars, said Representative Teresa Fernandez, a Democrat from New Mexico and chair of the Democratic Women's Caucus. But Republicans argued it was Democrats who were overreacting to the changes and now threatening progress toward establishing the long-sought women's museum in the nation's capital. Republican Representative Nicole Malliotakis, am I right?
Malliotakis.
Malliotakis, thank you. Of New York, the bill's chief sponsor, said it's a disgrace that Democrats would be standing in the way of the bill's passage. Perhaps the party that is opposing a women's history museum on the National Mall because they want to have transgender exhibits, maybe they are the ones who are trans-obsessed. Has anyone said that they want to have transgender exhibits?
Okay.
Just in the... Yeah, there you go.
All right. So let's be clear. The first thing they did...
If you're gonna rant, I need to get it on mic.
I'm sorry. This is... I know of all the things going on, but this is just... So what they first... This has been in progress for years, all the way along. It's been bipartisan. There's a whole group, various groups of people putting this museum together, all sorts of experts and others and advisory councils, and everybody's playing well together. They've raised over $70 million for it. This next step was supposed to be just passing a provision that will transfer the property from the federal government to the Smithsonian because it's part of this one. It's just a technical part of the long-term process. And what did the Republicans do at the last minute a few weeks ago? They slipped in a change to add two sentences that there's already a plan for where it's going to be and its general outlines of the focus. And they'll say that at the end of the description of location, they add that the President of the United States may alter the location, the decision on location, and focus. So in two sentences, they essentially put all of the power and authority of location and design and focus into the hands of President Trump.
Who's a man, just
and and taking it away from all of
for
the various
of you
committees
for at home.
And think about the ballroom and think about the arch and think about how they've destroyed the reflecting pool, which won't reflect anymore, and this won't reflect on women. So outrageous that after all of this, they would sneak in this line. And so, of course, the Democratic Women's Caucus protested this loudly. So then what did they do? They added this additional provision on trans. And so on the floor, they're not talking about the fact that they've shifted all of the authority to make decisions about location and every substance over to Trump. They just say, oh, the Democrats are holding this up over the trans issue. And the Democrats kept saying, well, what about, this is the sentence, why are you giving all authority over, not to these people who've been planning it for years? This is just, I know there's a lot of more important stuff going on that's affecting people's lives, but this to me is just so insulting.
It's all important.
Trump, who abolishes the, you know, funding for women's health programs, Trump, who abolishes the Violence Against Women's Division in the Justice Department, you know, Trump, who leading women military folks have been driven out of key positions in the military, in NASA, other places, and he's going to take control of where the Women's Museum is going to be sited and what the focus is going to be. I'm sorry, folks, I've lost it. This is just the bridge too far.
And Bob, doesn't this
go ahead.
But doesn't this really do a number on the integrity of history?
Oh, yes, it does.
I mean, that's what makes it so infuriating.
Yes.
What makes it infuriating is the House and Senate.
Said the infuriated person.
The House and Senate Republicans went along with this. Why did they allow that sentence in there? Why?
We will leave that question to sit in the room and to ponder over our holiday weekend. Judy Patrick, Bob Brigham, and Teresa Bourgeois, much love to you all. Thank you very much for being here and for sharing and for helping us as we raise money and do a panel. I hope you have a gorgeous holiday weekend and are able to celebrate the holiday in a proper way.
Today's the anniversary of the Great Society speech by LBJ. If you want a reminder of what a president sounds like and with a vision, read that this weekend.
A homework assignment on top of it.
After you go put flags at the cemetery.
Thanks to you all. We'll be back right after this.
Thank you.